Today's podcast is presented by Podgo. Podgo is the easiest way for you to monetize your podcast. Providing podcasters with a flat rate for ad space, you always know how much you're going to get when you include an ad from Podgo. It's for people who have their own podcast. Javier, if you weren't doing this podcast, what podcast would you want to do?
Oh, God, I don't even know. I would probably just ramble about something, maybe sports.
I'm surprised you didn't say the One Tree Hill rewatch.
The One Tree Hill rewatch isn't something that I would be doing besides this. It's something that I will be doing at some point. I don't even know. Won't I? Depends on what my ADHD wants to do. But eventually, you know, I'm rewatching How I Met Your Mother right now for like the 80th time. Maybe an 80,000th time for One Tree Hill is up around the corner.
That's fair. Find another podcast? I don't know. I've got a couple other ones that I've
You
been
do have another
about.
Podcast.
I do have another podcast. And we, you know, if you have a podcast, because everybody has an idea for a podcast, you know what? If you want to start it, if you want to get paid for it, Podgo has the hookup. Apply today to become a member and immediately be connected with advertisers that fit your audience at podgo.co, podgo.co. And when you get there, be sure to tell them that it's us who sent you in the How Did You Hear About It part of the application. Welcome to Crossbody of Work. My name is Evan.
I am Javier.
And we are talking today about living legend and current, at time of recording, Impact Knockouts champion, Mickie James.
Pew, pew, pew!
Yeah. Cowboy.
That's hardcore country.
Hardcore country.
It's even though she literally had no country to her gimmick in WWE. Anyways, and married to a British man. Also, shout out Mickie James. She's awesome.
It's true. She is awesome. Mickie James has been amazing since she debuted. Not even WWE. Like, she's been around for a long time. We're going to talk about it a little bit before she got to WWE. But she has been amazing, whether in WWE or TNA or on the indies. She's always rocking it.
There is a joke that could be made here by me. That is a dirty one, but I will not do it.
Because you are a good man.
I wouldn't say that.
did I go too far? Maybe.
Yeah, you went a little bit too far. Yeah. I would not say that at all. But, you know, sometimes maybe good, sometimes maybe shit.
Oh, the other things that may be shit, speaking of indies, Ring of Honor.
Pain.
Announcing that they're on hiatus starting after Final Battle. And we're going to try to come back for Supercard of Honor, and that all of their superstars are released starting now.
Yeah, I mean, the thing that really sucks about this more than anything, you know, is so many people are probably going to be out of work now that, you know, Ring of Honor was like their big move. And now, you know, it's really going to be difficult for them to find some exposure, especially in the current landscape of wrestling, which, yes, we have WWE and thankfully AEW now. But like, it's still two companies that are fully stacked with talent.
Yeah, they got too much already.
Yeah, like, yeah, sure. I could see people like, you know, Bandido, Roosh making the jump over. But aside from that, like, you know, maybe even a Danhausen. Love Danhausen. He can make a jump over to AEW. But like, you know, there are smaller names out there, like prospects and guys that ROH just had in their pocket because, you know, they found this incredible talent. They're going to try to cultivate it and hopefully turn them into someone who could be really successful for them someday, who now maybe we don't hear about anymore, at least won't hear about for a while now, because they just won't have the opportunity.
Ring of Honor fills this really important part of the void, which is that not quite indie, not quite mainstream company, right? Like, they do their weekly shows. They have the devoted fan base. They have the people there. And AEW and WWE are obviously the top two. But, you know, Ring of Honor fits right in with that, you know, level of, like, Impact. GCW now is really big.
Yeah.
PWG. Like, but they had some real structure to it, right, with the TV broadcasts and everything. So for them to just not exist, that just takes a lot of jobs away. And not just wrestlers, but like people who work behind the scenes and commentators and, you know, the staff. Like, that sucks.
Yeah. And it sucks even more because it's wild to me to think, like, at the beginning of next year, there's not going to be Ring of Honor and there's not going to be PWG. And those were like the two big independent things that I followed for yeah. so long and were really like helped me, you know, get really super into wrestling, you know, yeah. especially at a time period where the main company, WWE, wasn't pulling out a product that would really force people into wanting to get super into wrestling. Yeah. And it sucks because, you know, we see so many of the guys, especially now in AEW, look at all the talent at the top of the card. Where did those guys wrestle?
Ring of Honor.
Ring of Honor, PWG, like all those shows. And now it sucks because it's something that even the people coming up today who, you know, yeah, they'll get their shot eventually. But like, it's one of those things where, especially me, like I'm going to be 24 by the time this podcast comes out. If I were to want to pursue wrestling at any point, I would want to work for Ring of Honor. I would want to work for PWG. I don't want to go straight to AEW after a couple years on the super yeah. indies. Like I want to go and try my stuff out with those companies because those were companies that I enjoyed watching as a kid. Because I know those are kind of like quote unquote feeder companies for those people. It's also just a way to have fun. Those are just fun wrestling yeah. products. And you know, hopefully Ring of Honor is able to come back strong, and hopefully they don't have to change the name because Ring of Honor is just such a staple. It's been around since 2002.
It's also a great name for a company.
Yeah, Ring of Honor.
Like it makes sense. You know exactly what it's going to be about from the name.
It's like Impact. Like I'm never going to call it Impact. It's TNA. It just is.
It's a stupid joke, but it's TNA.
It's TNA, and I don't want to you know go out and say yeah you know it's over for Ring of Honor. It was definitely, there was going to be a reckoning that was going to come with the company just because they aren't really on TV. And it's really tough for them to run shows throughout all of this. And there's just no buzz, no heat around the company at all. And that's the worst place you could be in professional wrestling. But man, if they could somehow, you know, scrap it together and come back, that would be awesome. Because again, it's Ring of Honor. Like wrestling is better with Ring of Honor in it than without.
It's bringing up a lot of, for older fans, it's bringing up a lot of ECW memories of like, well, if we don't have it, it's so sad because it was like the indie. It was the one that we had that would always, we could rely on for quality matches. A couple of things. One, I don't know Ring of Honor as well as you do, but this podcast has reintroduced me to a lot of classic Ring of Honor matches, and holy shit, they're really good. So the idea that like the company that put on all those matches is going to be gone sucks. Also, everyone should tell Javier happy birthday on Twitter when they hear this episode. Yeah. Yeah.
So my birthday is, as the time of recording, on Thursday. My birthday is tomorrow, Friday, October 29th.
So wish him a happy belated. Do it up. Yeah.
Do it. Sure. I'm 24. I'm in my Kobe year.
You were in the Kobe year.
My Griffey year, who's a 24 in football?
Somebody's going to yell at us. Let's do the housekeeping things before we dive into the career of Mickey James. Wherever you're listening, be sure to rate 5 stars. It helps us out tremendously. If you leave your name with the rating, or you have a comment that you put in with the rating, we'll read it. Sure, we'll read it on air. Yeah.
Yeah, fuck it. Why not? We'll give you some play here.
We'll read things. Subscribe wherever you're listening to us, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, wherever you get us, make sure you hit the subscribe button. Tell your friends. Share all of our old episodes. We've got so many good episodes for them to dive back into. I bet we've covered at least one of their favorite wrestlers.
Yeah, tell your friends to tell a friend to tell a friend to tell a hoe.
Hoes in different area codes. Speaking of which, we did a little bit of research through the pod provider that we use to figure out the number one geolocation for people listening, and the biggest city that listens to us in terms of most listeners in the same city, Chicago, baby.
I love Chicago. Chi-Town, stand up. We will undoubtedly be taking a trip to Chicago at some point, Evan and I.
It's a cool-ass city.
As soon as he can get through customs without having to quarantine here.
Yeah.
Here and from here.
I want to go test out my Alex Caruso cosplay. So like, let's do this.
I need to have a Chicago deep dish pizza once before I die. I love Chicago. The city of Chicago is fucking awesome. It's always been a city I wanted to go to. Quite frankly, it's the hotbed for professional wrestling. So it's only right that we get there one day. Maybe an AEW pay-per-view or something like that.
We'll have to go.
If we can get it. It'll be our trip. Hopefully next year. If not, we'll get there at some point. All 13,000 of you or whoever the fuck who have listened to this podcast, probably more. Who knows? I don't know those ratings very well. Thank you. And all the other cities out there, step your fucking pussy game up, because Chicago's blowing you motherfuckers out of the water.
It was unnecessarily aggressive. We appreciate everybody who listens. Also, follow us on social media at Twitter. On Twitter at Crossbody of Work as well. The merch table is still open, fullpressshop.com, and keep your eyes peeled for some new merch coming.
Spoiler alert, long sleeve t-shirt.
That's
my
right.
idea.
Javier's idea. We got some new designs. We got some new stuff coming. Fullpressshop.com. Check it out. We'll be sure to tell you on Twitter when the new merch goes live. Mickey James. It's a real name. It's a good wrestling name.
Yeah, I mean, Mickey James. I mean, now she's Aldis or whatever. Yeah,
Mickey James Aldis.
Oh, she's a hyphen name. Oh, that's terrible. Yeah. I hate hyphen names.
She made the round in the indies. She started wrestling in 99. She was actually in the ECW dojo, which I did not know.
Oh.
Yeah, it's interesting.
I didn't know there was an ECW dojo.
Did Maryland Championship Wrestling, did some appearances in Ring of Honor, and did some early appearances on TNA's weekly pay-per-views as Alexis Lurie. We actually saw her when we covered TNA's first ever pay-per-view.
Yes, we did. Yeah. She was a surprise, to say the least.
We did not know she would be there. She was also part of The Gathering, Raven's flock.
Who the fuck wasn't a part of The Gathering?
I might have been part of The Gathering at one point.
I know I wasn't, because I was like 4 or 5.
Yes,
or
and they don't want toddlers in there. OVW in 2003 for Mickey, and then she would debut in WWE in October 2005 as Trish Stratus's biggest fan. It's an angle that we all know and love as wrestling fans, and an angle that we've already covered, because we covered Trish Stratus's career. Go back and listen to us talk about the WrestleMania 22 match. We're going to talk instead about the sequel, the match that comes directly after at Backlash 2006 between Mickey and Trish. Mickey is the women's champion, having won the title at WrestleMania 22. Trish wants her title back. This match is not as great as the first match, obviously, but it is it is interesting. We'll say it's interesting.
My first comment here is, yes, the rematch that I don't remember at all. I do not remember Backlash 2006 at all. And I remembered why I don't remember it at all. It's because it was a stupid Vince McMahon, Shawn Michaels feud that was going on.
Oh, yeah. This is the one with...
this isn't the God one, right?
This is the God one. This is Vince and Shane versus Michaels and God.
Yeah.
Great episode. great pay-per-view.
Okay, so we all, I assume most people know the storyline between Mickey and Trish. Mickey was a stalker. They had a match at Mania. Mickey grabbed some cooter, won the title. Mickey is the champion heading into this match.
Mickey's comes out, and she is in what I can only describe as peak mid-2000s fashion.
Jerry the King Lawler's dream fashion.
She is in a chunky necklace. She's got a scarf around her waist for some reason. She has striped leg warmers. She is a vibe. She walked into an Aeropostale and said, I want one of everything.
She looks exactly like Regina George in Mean Girls.
Yes. What'd you think of the match?
There wasn't much to think about. Unfortunately,
it's short, but we'll talk about why it's short.
I mean, yeah, I like the story they were telling
here,
because it's very much, I mean, the first match was all about Mickey being crazy and like how it was unpredictable for Trish because she just didn't know how to deal with this woman who literally wasn't scared to do anything because she's fucking insane. But in this match, it was very much timid Mickey. She was kind of nervous.
A fearless Trish. Trish was like, all right, I've lost my title to you. Like, I'm just going to come at you with whatever I got. I'm going to freak you out now.
She's nothing to lose. Yeah. And Trish was very nervous and kind of scared to really do anything. And you could see it early on here because they have like a very awkward like 10-second stare down right after the bell rings. And it's very much just Trish staring daggers into Mickey and Mickey just looking around like, hey, yo, what the fuck?
Why is this baby looking at me like this?
They do have some solid technical work to start off here. You know, the exchanges. Everyone who has seen a wrestling match knows the exchanges. You know, collar and elbow stuff. Yeah. Drop downs, all that jazz. Pins, back and forth.
Trish decides to freak out Mickey first with she blows her a kiss. And it freaks Mickey out. She goes to charge at her. Trish does her classic Matrix dodge.
The Matrix.
And we get a head scissors from Trish.
Yes, Trish is very good.
she's like, it's like she's the best women's wrestler of the 2000s.
Yeah.
Oh, wait, she is.
Trish misses on a chick kick attempt and then follows right up with it with a fucking V-trigger.
Like, yeah, I'm just sitting here, you know, watching the first match, getting excited. I'm like, oh, you know, chick kick. And I like glance away for a second. It's like, wait a second. Did Trish just hit a V-trigger?
It's like, oh, so Kenny Omega stole the move from Trish Stratus.
Yes, Canadians with paying homage to other Canadians.
He's from Winnipeg, you idiot. Trish does a thes press from the apron to the outside area where Mickey was.
It was like almost Sasha's Meteora, but not quite.
Yeah, she definitely got a little too high on that one.
Yes. Trish is fucking dominating this whole match.
Yeah, she is killing it right now. Trish gets Mickey into the corner, stands on top of her, and starts raining down punches. Mickey is just like, fuck this, and then yeets Trish up and over the top rope and out of the ring. Trish lands very hard on her shoulder.
And legitimately dislocates her shoulder.
Yeah. Oh, and so that's why what's happening.
That is why the match is the way that it is. That's why it's pretty short. You see, as she gets back in the ring, Mickey just wants to win by countout. And Jack Doan is calling is doing the countout. And Trish gets back into about 7. And you see Doan go down, talk to Trish, and he throws the X up. He does ever so
briefly.
I didn't
notice that. Wow.
Throws the X up quickly, and then he stops. And then he talks to Trish again, and Mickey's like doing the chokes to Trish.
Yeah.
And you'll notice that Mickey does nothing involving her shoulder after this. Because I think she probably was communicated that, hey, like legitimately hurt. And so she's doing chokes, and
she's like covering her on the head down.
Yeah, and covering her on the other side.
Yeah.
And Doan puts the X up again, meaning that Trish was legitimately hurt, and Mickey's like choking her. And that's how we get to the finish, is I think this was changed on the fly.
Well, it had to have been.
Yeah.
I assume.
Mickey finds a strap that I assume came off of one of her
outfits.
No,
she had wrist straps. Like,
oh,
like wrist
that's
straps
what it was.
On.
Yeah.
It looked like tape or something like that. Like medical, whatever the people wrapped their hands with.
Whatever Cesaro always has on his shoulder.
No. Like, you know what I mean, right? Like how boxers wrap their hands.
Wrist wraps. Yeah.
Yeah, those.
So she grabs the wrap and chokes Trish with it to a count of 5. And so that way it gives Doan the excuse to disqualify her. And the fans are kind of like, what the fuck? Like, that was really quick.
It's only been like 4 minutes.
Yeah. Mickey sells it with a shocked face of like, oh, I didn't think I'd get disqualified, but I've got my title. And Trish looks legitimately furious.
Well, fuck off. She separated her goddamn shoulder.
As somebody who has separated his shoulder before, it fucking sucks.
Yeah, I mean, listen, it's one thing if she like dislocated a shoulder, you could pop it back in. I mean, you probably tore your rotator cuff if you've dislocated your shoulder, but whatever, you can pop it back in, you'll be fine. Separating that motherfucker, though, good luck with that.
Yeah, that's rough. And it only took Trish 6 weeks to heal. They would have another blow-off match. Mickey would win. And that would lead to Trish. I think that's when she started teaming with Carlito.
Oh, God.
And he would move on to other challengers.
Carlito, who I think opened this pay-per-view against Chris Masters.
Oh, what an interesting pay-per-view Backlash 2006 is. Go watch Backlash 2006, everyone, and report
or
back.
Don't, or literally do not.
Tell me about the religious experience of watching Shawn Michaels team with the Lord Almighty.
Literally do not even.
Let's move on to match 2. We're still in WWE. This is Judgment Day 2008. It is Mickey defending the WWE Women's Championship against Melina and Beth Phoenix, where Mickey is truly the third wheel in this feud.
She really is. It was such a weird match to me because all right, let's just get right into it. Like, the match starts and Beth immediately turns to Melina and is like, get the fuck out of the ring.
Get out of the ring. So a little bit of the backstory on the feud between Beth and Melina. So back in April, Mickey defeated Beth to win her Force Women's Championship. Beth got a title rematch on the May 5th edition of Raw. She was defeated after Melina accidentally struck Phoenix with a boot. Phoenix and Melina were defeated by Mickey and Maria after Phoenix abandoned Melina due to being accidentally knocked off the ring. So Melina and Beth Phoenix had been partners. A couple of accidental things by Melina and Beth turned on her and left her to get fucking wrecked in that tag match. Melina turned face after the match because Beth attacked her backstage. So alignment chart, you've got Beth as the heel, you've got Melina as the face, and you got Mickey as a face, but who has a little bit more edge than Melina at this point.
Yes.
There's your background.
Okay.
Makes for an interesting match.
And also styles are really interesting because Beth, who we've covered on this podcast before, is a very power-heavy based wrestler because she is strong as fuck.
She's huge, yeah.
She's fucking strong as fuck, boy. Mickey is very much kind of like a pseudo technical kind of like brawly, but
Mickey
not
can
really.
Kind of do it all. She has a very well rounded repertoire.
Yeah, yeah, that's kind of the way I would go about that. And then Melina is fine.
Melina's like, if you had to pick something for her, she's athletic more than she is like a wrestler.
Yeah, yeah. And I can't judge Melina because she did get significantly way better at wrestling, especially by this point. I mean, she busted her ass for that.
Yeah.
But I don't know, this kind of mesh of styles, the match was fine. It didn't really work for me. I feel like I would say this about almost any women's match from this era. It would have done well with another like 5 minutes.
Yeah. The thing that was interesting to me with the match, we'll talk about when we talk about the spots. Normally, if there's a triple threat match where two people are having a feud, the third person gets forgotten about in the match. In this match, Mickey fucking dominates.
Like, yeah.
She takes advantage of the fact that they hate each other to just be on top most of the match, which is so weird. That never happens.
Yeah, and like I said earlier, the match starts off with Beth telling Melina to get out of the ring. She like sits on the middle rope and holds it open so that Melina has a way to get out.
Which is very polite of her.
Yeah, and Melina, rather than taking her up on such a gracious offer, hey, don't get your ass kicked. Just go now.
Just go hang out.
Yeah, avoid the violence. What she responds with is by going, "This is Sparta," and 300 kicking her ass like King Leonidas out of the fucking ring.
It's pretty great.
And then she almost loses the match because Mickey just grabs her from behind, hits an Okada roll with a bridge, and almost gets a three count.
It's great. Mickey is then trying to run the ropes, and Beth, who's on the outside, dips the rope, sending Mickey to the outside. We get a clothesline on the outside. Then Mickey gets back in control. Like, she gets another roll-up, same type of roll-up on Beth for a two. Like, she is consistently being the best wrestler in the match.
Yeah, I mean, she tried doing her, like, jumping DDT thing, which I never knew what that was called.
Me neither. I didn't look it up. You keep talking about the spot. I'm going to figure out if that has
anything. Yeah, she tries doing that on Beth. Then Belita comes over right as she's jumping. So what she does is she just gets her legs up on Melina and uses Beth to kind of shift her momentum over and hits a head scissors on Melina. And then she follows it up, getting right back to Beth, and just puts this, like, I want to say it was kind of like a sleeper hold, but honestly, it kind of looked super weird. It was kind of like Shayna Baszler's finisher, but not really.
But not quite the Garofuda,
Yeah, it was somewhere in that range. It looked pretty cool, though. Beth's facial expressions were very good in that. A little bit further down the line, at one point here, Beth hits an electric chair on Melina while Mickey's on the top rope. And then Mickey does her little diving thest press onto Beth.
She loves this move. It happens in 4 out of 5 matches.
Yes, she pins Beth immediately from that same kind of position. Beth counters into her own pin. Mickey rolls out of it and then hits a basement dropkick right to the fucking mush.
Mickey is really good at the basement dropkick.
Yeah, it's kind of hard to be bad at a basement dropkick, though.
It's the lowest of the dropkicks. That's why it's in the basement. But like, shit, if she doesn't connect with it every time.
Yeah, that woman does not know how to kayfabe that shit.
Mickey does not miss. Also, if you're wondering, it's called the Mickey DT.
I don't like that.
I'm just reporting, man. It's the Mickey DT.
Kind of wish I didn't know. It's not as good. It's not as bad as the DD Ty, the Tainar Conti one.
Oh yeah,
call it a DD Tay.
I was like, why would they make that Ty Dillinger's finisher? But then I was like, that's not it. That's not the right one.
It's not the right one. Not the same person at all.
It's not the right person.
At one point down the line here, Beth grabs Melina and puts her in like a backbreaker torture rack position, and then grabs Mickey and stacks her on top of Melina in the exact same way, and does the backbreaker torture rack thing twice. She hits two of them, yep. The little jumping motion type deals, before dropping back with both of them.
Beth is strong.
Beth is a freak.
She is strong.
That woman is strong as fuck. And then at one point down the line, as we get to the finish here, because unfortunately this match is not very long.
No.
Melina hits a neck breaker on Beth. Mickey comes in, hits the jumping DDT on Melina.
You can't make me.
The 1-2-3, Mickey retains her title.
The Mickey DT, yes, and Mickey retains her title. Melina and Beth would go on to continue to feud and deal with their problems.
It was preferably on the Springer show.
Springer, Jerry. All right, we are going to take our first break. When we get back, we are looking at probably the worst segment that Mickey James has been a part of. Back from the break, and we are looking at something that I bet is part of the reason why Mickey did not want to come back to WWE. I mean, she got released, but holy shit, this segment sucks, and this whole feud sucks. If you know about Mickey James, and if you followed wrestling in the 2010s, you know the segment we're talking about. Boys and girls, it is Piggy James.
God, I really, really did not like this at all. It was such a waste of incredible talent. Lake Cool was on fire at this moment.
Lake Cool were insufferable, which is great. Yeah,
they were great as the like kind of Regina George and her crew kind of team.
WWE goes to the Mean Girls well a lot. They did in NXT. It's just, hey, there are women here who are mean to other women, which like WWE could really use some more nuance. That would be amazing. But it's a well they go to a lot. And honestly, Lay Cool was probably the best ones that they did.
Not even probably. It was the best one that they did.
But holy shit, if this feud wasn't just uncomfortable.
Yeah. It starts off with Mickey immediately mid-promo, which is going, after all the embarrassment you two have put me through, I'd be careful because it's about time I embarrass you and teach you both some manners. And then she decks this shit out of Michelle McCool.
Mickey's out there with Maria Kanellis as her like backup against Lay Cool. And in the ring, they have a bunch of food. It's a going away party for Piggy James. To dive a little bit into what the hell we're talking about, if you don't know, Lay Cool made fun of Mickey James for being fat. Which, for those of you who are sitting there at home going, oh, when was Mickey James fat? The answer's never.
Yeah, literally never. Take a look at Mickey James.
Yeah. Never.
No, that's what she lived. Mickey James has looked the exact same her entire career, by the way.
And even if somebody got bigger, leave them the fuck alone. Don't call them Piggy.
Sure, she got bigger at one point. When she was pregnant.
With a child.
That is literally the only time. Because I think she has two kids with Nick Aldis or something like that.
The fact that they're like, hey, what's the thing we can use? Well, we're going to get Michelle McCool and Layla to call Mickey fat on TV for multiple weeks.
Also, you know how they say the first child is like, sure, like, you know, you have a kid, but the second child is what like ruins your body.
Yeah.
You know that saying for women?
Yeah.
Kids. Mickey James, holy fuck, did she bounce back from that second baby?
Yeah.
She is in terrific shape.
She is. And she's healthy and she looks great, and she there's literally, in the time that she has been in the public eye, I don't think there's been a single time where you could look at Mickey James and say not say that she looks amazing.
She literally has looked the exact same.
So the fact that WWE and some, you just fucking know it, some shithead dude writer backstage being like, God, we need something to give a little heat to this feud between Lay Cool and Mickey James. I know, we're gonna say Mickey's fat, you asshole.
Was this you, Freddie Prinze Jr.?
Freddie Prinze would never.
I don't know.
Freddie Prinze is a saint. He's all that.
He's got he's got Sarah Michelle Gellar, and that's it. Anyways.
So, yes, as you mentioned, Mickey clocks Layla, and Maria goes after Michelle McCool. Beth Phoenix emerges from the back and is truly deciding who to help, and she hands it up a lot. She's like, who do I assist?
She's like, her face, she's like, duh!
The most indecisive I've seen someone in wrestling rings up until Jon Stewart at that SummerSlam, where he was like, what am I doing in the ring? Oh, I'm gonna, woo. You can't break Ric Flair's record. God, it took him so long to hit him.
And hit.
Oh, Beth Phoenix decides to help the heels, naturally.
Yes, she takes out Maria so easily and so quickly.
Just bye.
Just goodbye. Who Maria, never to be seen again. She gets hit one time, thrown out of the ring. She's gone forever. Sent her back to OVW.
Out for weeks.
Yeah, and then she attacked all three of them, gang up on Mickey in the corner. And then they restrain Mickey with Beth really being just the one holding her down because strong woman, do strong thing. And then you hear Michelle McCool say, looks like it's feeding time, Piggy James. And she goes to the table. She grabs a cake. And the cake is a pig. There's pink fondant around it. And it is a pig. And what does she do with the cake? She fucking pie faces it right into Mickey's face.
I know this isn't the biggest thing to be upset about. That fondant pig was on top of a larger cake. Why don't you just use the whole cake? Like, if you really want to use this egg, just use the whole cake. Instead, she literally just picks the topping off the cake like a psychopath. Like, I know it's not the biggest problem, but it bothered the shit out of me.
Also, why would that? That was a pretty big ass fondant pig. Like,
yeah, that clearly came from fucking.
Like, that was
Buddy,
its own.
That was from Buddy Velastro or Duff, if I ever saw one. All right, we're making a cake today. It's going to be used to embarrass a woman on national TV.
I love Cake Boss. It's such a fun show. And then they're like, "I'm sure you'd like a drink with all this cake," and they grab the bowl of punch like it's fucking prom, and they fucking spike it right down on her head.
Michelle McCool
is wearing white pants, by the way.
Terrible idea. They dumped the punch on her. One, there was no punch bowl at my prom because I think they all thought that it would get spiked. Instead, everybody just showed up hammered to prom. Like, everyone was just like, I'm going to do this at home.
I wish I could tell you what my prom was like, but I didn't go to either one of them.
What?
I didn't go to junior or senior prom.
You were like, fuck this shit, I am
out. I just didn't want to go. I don't do parties. I didn't like most of the people in my grade anyways. So I was like, fuck
that's
it.
That's fair.
It's not worth it. I didn't want to look for a date. I mean, admittedly, junior prom, I may or may not have had a girlfriend during junior prom who went without me. Senior year, I had no reason. I didn't want to ask anyone out. I said, fuck it.
I learned that apparently if you're dating somebody, you still have to ask them to prom, which I didn't know was a thing. Cause I was like, hey, I asked my then girlfriend, I was like, what are you wearing to prom? What color are you wearing so we can match? She's like, well, you haven't asked me. I was like, well, we're fucking dating. I don't know what you want me to say. And she's like, well, you got to ask me. I'm like, okay, do you want to go to prom? She's like, over text. I'm like, what the fuck do you want? All right.
I'm going to fucking call you right now.
You want me to drive to your house? If you're wondering, we found this promo on YouTube. WWE has turned off the comments.
Hey, remember Be a Star?
Remember what CM Punk said in the pipe bomb about
you want to do this whole bully campaign?
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, WWE being hypocrites. It's like the sun rising.
And then setting.
We just know it's going to happen. Mickey James was released in April of 2010 and by September 2010 had signed on with TNA back to where she had debuted as Alexa Lee. She continued to use her real name, Mickey James. And the match we're looking at in TNA is, the first one we're looking at in TNA is from Final Resolution 2012, Mickey James versus Tara, aka Victoria, for the Knockouts Championship. Mickey had been gone for 3 months. and then won a number one contender's fatal four way to earn the title shot against Tara, who I think had been knockout champion for a while at this point.
It had been a while, yeah.
Was this TNA when you were watching?
No.
No, this wasn't your era?
I was not watching TNA 2020. Actually, I might have been.
Mickey with some interesting gear. She's really leaning into the countryside with the overalls.
It's nice. I think I was watching, but I think I was only watching certain things, and the knockouts were not one of them.
Fair enough. Tara is here with Jesse.
I remember Jesse.
When I first saw Jesse, I was like, who in the blue hell is this Jersey Shore ripoff?
Yep.
And then I realized that it's part of the bromance.
Yep.
With Robbie E, a.k.a. Robert Stone.
Yep.
Oh.
I hated that so much.
What, the bromance?
Yes. I did not like them. I actually did watch Jersey Shore. To be fair, by default most of the time, because my brother would just always watch it in our room, and I didn't want to go anywhere other than my bed, so I just watched it too.
We ironically started watching it in my senior year of high school. And then it eventually became appointment viewing for my friend group. We would just watch it.
I fucking know, right? Like, I was just, like, begrudgingly watching it at first. And then yeah. I was just, like, into it.
Best part is that, well, two things. One, we started playing the Jersey Shore drinking game. Specifically when you're New Year's Eve, they were doing a marathon. So we played the drinking game, which is meant to kill you. It's like every time you see an Italian flag, drink. Anytime somebody takes their shirt off, drink. Anytime somebody says GTL, drink. Anytime they start drinking, you drink. Like, it's
you literally would not survive.
We got through like an episode and a half before we're like, we're gonna die.
How did you even live? Your liver must have exploded.
It wasn't shots. It was like a drink, just like a whatever drink you were drinking. It's not like take a shot every time these things happened, or else we would actually have been legally dead. The other good thing,
as opposed to illegally dead.
Yes, that's where you die, and they didn't want you to. The other thing that happened is there have been so many like spinoffs of the Jersey Shore in other countries, and the best one is Geordie Shore. It's the UK version. It is phenomenal.
Okay, first off, wasn't there a Floribama Shore?
There 100% was.
It's like a border of fucking Florida and Alabama. Like, one, I didn't even know that was a thing. Obviously, I knew that Florida and Alabama were connected to each other. I did not know there was a Florida-Alabama Shore that is like a thing. Like, everyone knows the boardwalk in New Jersey. Like, that's just a thing that people know, especially if you're American. Yeah. Because, one, you just fucking know about it. Or, two, you watch The Sopranos.
So the one in England, which takes place in Newcastle, is called Geordie Shore. The Jersey Shore has 6 seasons. Geordie Shore has 22.
How the fuck? First off, how do you even understand these people? The Geordie accent is the worst one.
All I know is that the one episode I remember is a guy is talking about going to a bar to hit on some birds. And he says, bam, bam, in there like swimwear. And I can't not say it now. I saw this episode maybe a decade ago. And I'm still like, bam, bam, in there like swimwear. And, like, it's the best. Jersey Shore is the peak. That we got way off topic talking about Jesse.
Speaking of Jersey Shore, hardcore country!
That's right. What'd you think of the match?
It was fine. It's not bad. I could have done without Taz commentating on a knockouts match, personally speaking.
Because he's doing his like weird Jerry Lawler cosplay?
Yes, yeah. He is. Terrence Arell is the referee for this match, which is good because it means Terrence Arell is not wrestling in this match.
It also is weirdly just like, hey, look at the knockouts division again being ahead of WWE's Women's Revolution.
Yes.
Like, hey, cool. A female referee and just cool. Like, yeah, nobody, it's not a big deal. Stephanie McMahon would have been out there with fucking bells and whistles if this was WWE. Like, look!
Yes,
we have one!
She's wearing very short cutoff shorts and a crop top ref shirt, but not that's okay. You know, we're getting there. We're getting there.
Early on, again, trading a lot of your classic starting moves, trading headlocks. Yeah. Tara with control of the left arm for a long time.
Yeah, and she puts on a head scissors at one point too. Which is, there's a really cool spot, which is one I don't think I've seen before, at least, or I haven't noticed. So when someone puts on like an arm ringer or something and they do the, you know, the twist over yeah. and everything, the person does like a lot of like little moves to get out of it. They'll do like a kip up or something, or like Mickey did here. She did a cartwheel. Mm-hmm. And usually they're able to get out of it with like an arm drag or whatever the fuck. But here, after Mickey does the cartwheel, Tara just grabbed her by the hair and just pulled her back down to the ground.
No.
I thought that was cool. I don't think I've ever seen that before. Like, not grabbing someone by the hair, but just stopping someone from yeah. breaking the arm ringer.
It's like, what are you doing? Stop it.
Yeah. Mickey Okada does the Okada roll.
She does.
To get a near fall almost right after that. She does a Northern Lights suplex too and all this type of shit. She loves a bridge. She loves a bridge.
Mickey loves a bridge.
She's never seen a bridge she didn't want to jump into.
Yeah, her country songs, all bridges. No chorus, no verses, just eight bridges.
By someone whose last name is Bridges.
Favorite movie, Bridges of Madison County.
21 Bridges. Mickey is selling very good in this match. But yes. before that, before she loses her advantage, she does a Hurricane Rana. And then can't do her jumping DDT because Jesse gets like on the apron and then like drags Tara out of the ring. And then yeah. Mickey just says, fuck that, and just drop kicks them both, like using yes. the rope, like through the ropes, which is fun.
And then Jesse's a distraction. It's enough to get to her the opening. And she whips Mickey down on the apron, like just pulls her down on the apron.
Yeah, she does that, and then she throws her into the stairs. She does a bunch of other shit.
And douchebag Jesse just whips his shirt off for no reason. He had guys like that have like a little timer in their head, and they're like, "It's been too long with a shirt on. I gotta take off the pump cover." And he throws it at Mickey for no reason.
Not the pump cover.
Not the pump cover.
I don't know how people. I don't know why people like being without shirts. I feel so weird when I don't have a shirt on.
I was talking about this in the episode that came out the day that we're recording of my other podcast, Pop Capsule Podcast. We're talking about Halloween costumes. And one year I was the Old Spice guy, like from the old commercials. I will again put on record, I did not color my skin. I have never been really confident in my body. I walked around my university residence shirtless for a whole night in a towel. Where did I get the confidence to do that?
I'm just going to put it out there. I look damn good without a shirt on. I've gotten myself into fantastic shape.
Yeah.
And I still feel kind of weird when I take them off. I don't know. Weird. Like, tank tops are fine. I like wearing tank tops now. Arms, you know, the guns are out and shit. But, like, I don't know. Something about being shirtless is just, like, weird.
My ideal outfit is what Keith Lee wrestles in.
It's chilly.
That's what I want my gear to look like all the time. Or actually Kevin Owens. Kevin that's Owens, exactly yeah. what I was thinking.
No, I do like a shorter short though, like a 5-incher.
Yeah. Gotta be the short shorts. Show off the legs.
Not a big, you know, down below the knee.
Yeah.
Like not Kevin Owens. Adam Sandler. Adam Sandler kind of guy. Jesse at one point here distracts Taryn Terrell. So at one point Tara goes for the Widow's Peak. Mickey rolled out of it into a pin, which she probably would have scored the 3 count on had Taryn Terrell not been distracted by Jesse's bitch ass.
And his huge pecs.
Yeah, Tara hit a spider web at one point here for a near fall. Mickey then gets the advantage back. She heats up. She loves a running, jumping clothesline. A
series of them, yep.
Loves to do it. She did like 4 or 5 of them motherfuckers in a row. Then she has a really cool little sequence here. She does a back kick into a V-trigger into an enziguri. And I was like, oh, okay.
Also, the crowd is loving it right now because TNA crowd love Mickey because she's got the country charm. She really does. She's from Virginia, if you're curious.
Yes. Yes, she is. She doesn't have too much of a southern accent, though.
No.
Not much of a draw on
but the Mickey. But the TNA fan base, they love her.
Yeah, and then we start getting a little bit towards the end here. Mickey hits a flying Fez press to the outside.
Happens every match.
Jesse comes in for some distraction. He gets up on the apron with Mickey, eats a back kick. Tara drags Mickey back into the ring, hits a Widow's Peak. 1, 2, 3. Tara retains the title.
In terms of Dave Meltzer star ratings. This is the highest rating that Mickey got in TNA up until, yeah, like, so this was the highest rated match. I thought this was a pretty good match. I think there's probably more like bigger moments that she's had, like winning the title and stuff like that.
Yeah.
But this is just a good match between two really solid wrestlers.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm sure there are probably better matches, to be honest. I don't trust Meltzer anymore. Fuck you.
Everything's 7 stars. We're going to take our last break. When we get back, we're looking at her return in NXT and a match that I went to. Back from the break, we are looking at NXT TakeOver Toronto versus Asuka for the NXT Women's Championship. This is a match that I went to because I went to NXT TakeOver Toronto. I was in the audience. I was chanting 10 anytime Ty Dillinger did anything because I am an asshole.
This was such a moment for, like, that 2016 was such a great year for NXT. Like, in my opinion, it's the best year of NXT. But just fucking what a moment, you know? Like, Toronto was such a moment. I feel
that,
like, as far
show
as
fucking
wrestling
slaps.
That's such a fantastic show.
Considering that the worst or the least well received match on the card was either this, which was good.
I don't even think so.
Or it's the main event.
What was the main event again?
Shinsuke versus Samoa Joe.
Come on.
Right? It makes sense. The thing is, the 2 out of 3 falls match, DIY versus the Revival, made us all tired.
In my opinion, legitimately, I think it's one of the 3 greatest tag team matches in the history of professional wrestling.
It's number 1 for me, but I'm biased. I was there.
Yeah, like, it's fantastic. The crowd was into it from beginning to end. The story that was told, the great, great, great work that those two guys did. And then, unfortunately, it had to be followed up. And this was the match that did so.
Yeah.
And it was Mickie James returning to WWE for the first time in however many years. Returning
6 years.
Coming to NXT for a one-time only appearance to wrestle Asuka.
Yes. The rumor is that initially, since it was in Toronto, they wanted Trish Stratus for the spot. For some reason, she was unavailable. They got Mickey. Mickey impressed so much in this match that she would end up coming back for her second run in WWE.
I thought it was because Trish got pregnant.
Was that what it was? I didn't remember exactly what the reason was.
I think it was because she got pregnant.
Well, yeah, that's hard to wrestle when you're pregnant.
Yeah, just ask Becky Lynch.
God, this era of Asuka is
peak.
Just so
it's peak
good.
Asuka.
It's so fucking good.
She is so much better than every single woman in professional wrestling at this time. It's not even funny.
And here's the thing. Mickey has, of the 5 matches that we watched, this is the best match of Mickey's career.
Not even close, in my opinion.
And then the other ones that can be argued are the one against Trish. Like, that's the other one that can argue. But this match is lit, and part of it is just because Asuka is so good at the wrestling. Yeah.
Such a great story, too. Like, the fact that Asuka is able to tell the stories that she's able to tell while still being so dominant and so fucking good is insane. Like, she genuinely is, as a wrestling talent, like a once in a generation kind of performer, and she has not been on TV in so long. And it hurts. It hurts. I really, I don't care if she loves WWE or whatever the fuck. I just need her to be out of that company because she is too good. She is too good to be squandered with them. She's not a right fit for them. I'm not saying she should go to AEW or anything. I don't know. In my opinion, I think she should go back to Japan. But she's so fucking good and she needs to be utilized because, unfortunately, she is kind of getting, you know, she's in the twilight of her career, not the ascent. It's kind of going down, not up. So, like, she just needs to get the best she can out of the last good years of her career and just be on with it because she is just so damn good.
She is incredible. Early on in the match, we get a handshake with, like, the forehead-to-forehead stare, which is very intense, and Mickey blows Asuka a kiss, and the beginning of the match, just the way these two were taunting each other was fantastic.
Yeah, I mean, they milked everything out of the collar and elbow tie from the beginning. They, like, rolled around and shit and all that. Mickey gets the better of Asuka early and forces Asuka to retreat. Which is something that we had not seen from her at this point. She was this was during Asuka's insanely dominant reign. It only really just begun because I believe she beat Bayley Was it the SummerSlam takeover?
Yes.
Was it at Brooklyn that she won the title, or was it at WrestleMania?
I do not remember. Talk about the match. We'll
figure it out. I think it was at WrestleMania, and then they had a rematch in Brooklyn.
Yes, it was at WrestleMania. Yep.
Yeah, so she's beaten so many women at this point, aside from Bayley. She said she sent Bayley running to the main roster and shit like that. We really haven't seen Asuka get tested to the point of frustration. And she had to retreat early on here. So that's kind of like an elevation for Mickie James, so to speak, at least in NXT terms.
Mm-hmm.
Mickie gets, while Asuka's out there, Mickie sits on the middle rope, holds the ropes open for Asuka to get in.
And Asuka goes under the middle rope instead.
Yeah, she goes in between the middle and bottom rope.
Which is great. Then we get a big hip attack by Asuka, sends Mickie to the outside, and Asuka then returns favor and is like, I'm going to send the rope for you. You want to come in? Like, you want to play games?
Yes.
Mickie makes some sort of gesture on her way in that upsets Asuka. I don't know what it was.
Because while Mickie is trying to get into the ring, Asuka fucking decks her ass.
But it's after Mickie makes a gesture that is like, the camera angle doesn't catch it.
Yeah, I could see
it. I like to believe that it's the same gesture she did to Trish, but I think that would be inappropriate.
Hey-o!
And so then Asuka attacks her. And
they're fighting ringside. It's fucking hilarious. Mickie tries for a back kick. Asuka grabs her boot, puts her in an ankle lock, lets go of the ankle lock, grabs her around the waist, hits a fucking German suplex on the outside.
Asuka's firmly in control. And this is also kind of the beginnings. I think this was the beginnings of the heel turn for Asuka. Because, again, if you hold the title for over 500 days, you can't be just face or just heel for the whole time. Yeah. You got to turn at some point.
Yeah.
You just run out of people to face.
I think she was already a heel.
I think she had started turning heel. Like, this was not the impetus, but this was...
I'm pretty sure she was the cocky heel already by this point, because she definitely was for the second Bayley match.
Okay.
And by the time, I mean, Bayley was so over that by WrestleMania, it didn't fucking matter. She was going to be, Asuka was going to be the heel regardless.
That's true. That is true.
At one point here, Asuka starts hitting like the yes kicks that Daniel Bryan does.
Yeah.
And they are way scarier.
They are hard.
Mickey wants more. She's like coming, saying, come on, come get me. And then she grabs Asuka by the leg and puts on one of the worst single leg crabs I've ever seen in my life.
It's not great. Before that, Asuka had an abdominal stretch in the ropes, and the ref is counting to break it up. And Asuka does this great thing where she's just counting along with the ref. She's like, yeah, 2, 3, 4. I agree. Let me break it up. And I was like, that's good shit. Asuka's so good at just the in-ring, just the
she's awesome things. Man, she's awesome. And I'm gonna go out on a limb and say she's a great promo. She just does it a different language.
Yeah. Like you said, Mickie picks the leg, gets a crab,
transitions into a Muda lock right after that, which yeah. I appreciated.
And Asuka reaches the ropes.
Yes, Asuka reaches the ropes. At one point during an exchange, they're having Mickie just smacks the fucking shit out of Asuka. And Asuka is
pissed. Asuka misses a spinning back fist, and Mickie then proceeds to slap the taste out of her mouth.
Yes, Mickie.
Then we get the press. We get the diving press off the top.
Yes, she does that because she loves that move. So
she loves it, guys. She loves it.
She at one point here does a neck breaker, a bunch of running clotheslines. Asuka tries to go for a middle rope missile drop kick. Misses when Mickie ducks underneath it. Mickie gets her up, puts on a hits a flapjack, does another flying fucking Fez press. This is like the fifth one she's done, I swear.
Yeah.
For a near fall at one, and then right after the near fall, she tries going for the jumping DDT. Asuka counters it into a cross arm bar. That I'm gonna be honest, I don't even know how the fuck she did it.
Yeah, I don't quite know either.
I don't know how she did it, but she did it. She fucking did it.
She sure did.
Mick tries to go for a Mick kick. Or no, Mick hits a Mick kick for a near fall because Asuka is able to get her foot on the rope.
Yeah. And that's when Asuka then's like, it is time to now choke the life out of you as a person.
She's literally just like, I don't want to do this anymore.
Yeah, I'm tired of Canada. I want to leave. So Asuka locks in the Asuka lock. Mickey rolls away, rolls into a pin. Asuka keeps it locked on and kicks out, which is impressive. And then Mickey just has no choice. She has to tap. So there's no way to get out of it.
Because I think towards the end there, she's like face down onto the mat.
And yeah, Asuka's she's fucking toast.
Just nothing.
An amazing match. The best match of Mickey's career in terms of in-ring work.
Yeah.
Probably because Asuka's there.
Agreed.
Let's move to our last match. And it's one that happened last weekend.
I work fast, people.
It just happened the other day. It is the Knockouts Championship at Bound for Glory 2021. It is Mickie James versus Deonna Purrazzo. This match kind of, I don't know a lot about what's going on in Impact recently. I just know Deonna has been the Knockouts Champion for a while.
Yeah, it's been like a year and a half, I feel like. It's been a very long reign.
She has been dominant.
And she has been dominant. She's been kind of like the face of women's wrestling, really, outside of the big two companies. She's been going all over the place. She's been fighting all challengers. At Slammiversary, she had literally wiped out the locker room, so she had to get a mystery opponent. Who was it? Thunder Rosa. Which is actually the same night that this feud started, because after beating Thunder Rosa at Slammiversary, Mickie James came out and invited her to come to Empower, the all-women's pay-per-view that the NWA ran on that was basically created and fully produced by Mickie James. Deonna did not like that because she is a heel who has an attitude and didn't like the fact that she had her moment or spotlight or whatever taken away. By Mickey. And that basically led to where we are now, because they've had a lot of personal shit come up. I think at one point, Deonna went to like Mickey's farm or ranch or whatever that she has with Nick Aldis, and like, that's wild. Like, she went to her house. They had a little fight there. They had a scrap in the backstage area, signing contracts and shit. There was a lot of personal shit that went down. Mickey's definitely the very upset babyface, whereas Deonna's the cocky heel.
Yeah.
Who is very fucking good.
The fact that you just talked about like a home invasion reminds me of this thing that I've been playing for the last week. I told you about it already.
Is it the U simulator?
It is Journey of Wrestling. It's just a big simulator for you can pick whatever company you want to be in and what scenario. You can do like Ruthless Aggression era, you can do Attitude era, you can do modern day and do like a draft between all companies, which is what I did. And one of the things you do is you get to book segments. And one of the segments that I've been trying to book, but I don't have a feud to go with it yet, is there's a home invasion segment. I've been like, which feud? I don't think any of my feuds are hot enough to invade a house yet. So I'm getting there, but that just reminded me. Shout out Journey of Wrestling. It's fun as hell, and it's making me not get any work done. You bastards.
And I think you'll be fine.
Yeah, I'll be fine. What'd you think of the match?
Before we get into the match, the gear on both women is fucking sick.
Yes. Nice hat, Deonna Purrazzo. I did not know you were the Pope.
She is the virtuosa.
I expect her to come out in a Pope mobile.
Mickie James is out in this like white gear that looks so country, but also so sick. Deonna's wearing this like purple, like virtuosa, like fucking Italian style, like old Italian from the fucking Renaissance period type deal. It looks super sick. I like the color pattern on it. That was the first thing that stood out to me about this match. The first 5 minutes of this match aren't real because the ref holds up the title because the bell hasn't rang yet. But Mickie James, as the referee, is holding up the belt, just runs and starts beating up Deonna Purrazzo.
We've all seen the way that the cameras work when somebody holds up the belt. They zoom in on the title and usually like the ref from, you know, maybe like the chest up. All you see in the background is Mickey charging across the screen at Deonna. And I'm like, oh shit.
Yeah. So literally the bell hasn't rang for 5 minutes. They're just brawling on the outside up until Deonna. So they fight.
Beside the ramp. They're not up
next
the ramp.
To
they're
the
beside
ramp.
It. Yeah.
Deonna is able to ram Mickey into the staging area. And because of that, she really gets an advantage. And then she just grabs her by the arm and just drags her ass back to the ring. And as soon as they get back to the ring, bell rings 5 minutes later. And the match officially starts.
Yeah. which is interesting that they would just give them this. I was like, did the match start? Like, this is weird because I was thrown off by the title being thrown up or being put up. But
commentary is awful.
Commentary is bad.
It is D'Lo and Matt Stryker.
Oh, it's D'Lo. Okay.
D'Lo Brown and Matt Stryker.
It's not a good team at all. It's not great. We are on record as loving D'Lo Brown.
Yeah, D'Lo Brown is great. He's a fun wrestler. Not good at commentary. And
Go listen to our D'Lo Brown episode.
I just got to say it now. Despite being a complete and utter trash bag of a human being, Deonna Purrazzo's a damn good wrestler.
She's very good. Is she a trash bag human being?
Oh, she is a conservative nut piece of shit.
Okay.
Yeah, no, we don't like Deonna Purrazzo in my household.
Okay.
I'm sure she's a swell person to be around when you are not taking into account her beliefs. Yeah, suplex for a near fall here by Deonna. She was on top really for the beginning stages of the match because she got the advantage at the end of the before bell rigging thing. She at one point Mickey tries to go for a Hurricanrana. Deonna just stops her. And then fucking drops her with a powerbomb. And really, it's all Deonna up until they do a crossbody and they crossbody into each other.
That's true.
Shout out to the podcast, Crossbody Work.
Yeah, thanks, guys. Thanks for bringing the gimmick up. That's appreciated. Mickey finally gets a little bit of work in.
Which, by the way, this is where I need to point out. Like, the babyface is on fire. And yeah, the crowd is there. There's like 25 people here.
The crowd is so quiet.
I thought this was so sad, dude.
It sounds like it was in the middle of the pandemic.
It's not even like they're quiet. Everyone's making noise. There's just not that many people.
Which is so sad for a Bound for Glory.
It's Bound for fucking Glory. It's their biggest pay-per-view.
Mickey goes for a Hurricanrana, gets reversed into a powerbomb. That sucks. That hurts. Mickey with a huge slap of Deonna. Like, not as big as the Asuka one, but also really good. They trade punches. They're both on their knees. They slowly work in the rate of the feet. This is when Mickey kind of gets a little bit more shine. She's starting to pick her shit up a little bit.
Yeah, Hurricanrana into a flapjack, flying Thez press for a near fall.
Check it off. There it is.
Yes. At one point here, Deonna gets a little bit of control back. She tries going for the Queen's Gambit, which is just kind of like a spike power driver.
But can't get it because Mickey keeps kicking her.
Yeah, Mickey counters and hits her jumping DDT.
Yeah, the Mickey
for a near fall.
Yeah.
First time I've ever seen anyone kick out of that.
That's what commentary says, too.
Mickey is like selling being like flustered and kind of like out of it and like frustrated. It's kind of weird. It's kind of like delirious almost, I would say is the right word for that, because she's been beaten up and shit, but like she gets beaten up all the time. She is a wrestler.
It's part of the job.
Yeah, it's just interesting how they sold it this match. It was pretty cool though.
Commentary keeps talking about like, has she just lost a step? Is she out of it? And it's like,
yeah.
No, she's
like, they are trying so hard to make it obvious that she is going to win this match. At one point here, Deonna tries going for Queen's Gambit again, which is just a fantastic name, by the way.
It is.
It's great.
And it was assisted because she used the ropes to help get
Mickey. No. She tries going for it, but it gets blocked because Mickey blocked it. And then Mickey gets up on the top rope at one point here. Deonna meets her up there, puts a Fujiwara armbar on, which is her finisher.
Mm-hmm.
Mickey gets to, I'm sorry, this is before that. Mickey gets to the ropes. She put on the Fujiwara. Mickey gets to the ropes. As Mickey is up on the ropes, or by the ropes, she uses the ropes to help her get up. She's on the outside. She comes back in. But Deonna grabs her, uses the ropes, and spikes her with the Queen's Gambit.
It is a spike. Mickey lands directly on the top of her head. And kicks out.
I don't think anyone's kicked out of the Queen's Gambit. Legitimately.
Deonna is shocked. She makes the classic shocked face.
And then she does the classic heel move where she is frustrated like a motherfucker. Doesn't know what to do. I'm going to win by DQ. She goes outside, grabs a chair. The ref takes it from her immediately. Places it in
good
the corner.
Good refereeing.
Which, by the way, terrible refereeing. Yeah, you take the chair from her. You just place
it in
the
corner.
It's still in the ring.
It's nearby. That's bad.
It's bad. It's not good.
Bad.
And then at one point here, Mickey's like fighting for her fucking life while she's placed on the top rope. She starts biting Deanna.
Which is a weird choice.
Deanna gets off from the top. The ref's right next to her. So when Mickey goes for her flying Thez press, Deanna pulls the ref into the way and Mickey ends up nailing the ref with the move.
Yeah. Deanna immediately is like, it is time for the chair.
Yeah, it's chair time. It's concerto time. Mickey gets up while Deanna's coming with the chair, turns around, hits a Mick kick onto the chair, which then rebounds right into Van Deanna's face. Yeah, Van Damminator, but Mick kick. The ref recovers. It's a near fall on that move. So Mickey gets on the top rope. She wants to go for a flying Thez press again. Deanna meets her there and is like, hey, here's a Fujiwara armbar instead.
Yeah, stop trying this fucking move.
Here's a Fujiwara armbar instead. She has to break it because of the five count. But when she does break it, she just grabs Mickey's arm and says, yeet.
Yeet.
So you think at this point, okay, she's going to win with the Fujiwara armbar. Because after that, Mickey's arm is dead.
Yeah, she's got nothing left.
So what happens? Out of nowhere, Mickey James hits a tornado DDT, waits like a couple of seconds before doing a cover. 1, 2, 3, Mickey James wins the fucking Knockouts title.
I will say it was quite a surprise in terms of the book, like the way the match came up. Like it wasn't a surprise that Mickey would win. Like
it was a surprise in the match itself.
The match itself was a surprise because especially with that spiking Queen's Gambit, you're like, okay, Mickey's dead now.
Yeah, and it didn't happen super long before this. It was maybe a couple minutes before this, but like it's the point where, like right before it, it was very clear Deanna was going to focus heavily on the arm, and the arm is all fucked up and shit. So you would expect a little more of that. Maybe she would struggle with the Fujiwara armbar, but somehow manage to break it or something, get out of it, and then she would do some sort of move that would result in her winning. But no, it's just literally she gets thrown off the top rope. They take a couple seconds to collect themselves. She hits a tornado DDT. That's it.
That's it. That's all.
I'm not happy with the result of them as far as the finish goes. Like, I don't care that Deanna lost. I just want to put that out there. I really don't. Her title reign was great. Cool. Whatever. I just blatantly, I don't give a fuck about the Knockouts division in TNA. I don't care about really anything TNA. But like, it was a bit of a flat finish. No,
it just seemed too sudden with the story they had told. Like,
no, it felt like the right moment because there really wasn't anyone for Deanna. And
not in terms of giving the title, like just in the actual match itself.
Yeah,
there needed to be an extra like minute.
It's like I said,
heat.
Like. At least put her in a Fujiwara armbar or something and have her get out of it. Yeah. Like, you just started telling the story about the arm. Do the story on the arm.
Yeah. That is all five of our matches on current, as a recording, Knockouts champion Mickey James. What'd you think going and doing a deep dive in Mickey James' career?
I love Mickey James. I think Mickey James is really fun. She's always been a really, really fun wrestler, really good at wrestling. Again, kind of just like a jack of all trades. I love her fucking podcast. I do. She's such a charismatic woman. She's awesome. Genuinely good human being too.
Yeah.
I enjoyed going through and looking at her career because she's someone that I've always been a fan of. You know, and regardless of whether I thought she should have been champion or whatever at some points, blah blah blah. Like, the match with Asuka was one of my favorite matches, one of my favorite women's matches of that entire year. Like, I was I remember being so hyped going into that. I was like, oh my God, Mickey James is fight Asuka. Like, I'm so excited about this. And it delivered. I thought it delivered, at least.
It did.
It was a fantastic match. It's obviously the best one of the bunch for this episode. Mickey's awesome. Like, there's not much more to say about that. She will go down as one of the great women's wrestlers ever, because
she's part of a group of women's wrestlers who, one, were role models for a lot of the current crop of women's wrestlers, and two, continue to give back to women's wrestling, like NWA Empower, like the way that she has worked with women's wrestlers, the way that she's trying to find avenues for women to continue wrestling and things like that. Like, genuinely wants this part of the sport to continue to grow and succeed.
And was a big advocate for the women in WWE when she went back her second time around. Yeah. You know, she really was, I think part of the reason why she was released was because she was fighting for time, and I think they got annoyed with her, you know?
Can't get annoyed with Mickey. She's the best. Fuck you. Fuck you, Canyon. I assume it's Canyon. That fucking guy. That fucking Canyon guy. But not Chris Canyon. Chris Canyon was amazing. R.I.P. All right. That is our episode on Mickey James. She's wonderful. Javier, where can people find you on social media?
I'm on the Twitter machine at JMelloSports. Follow my press.
Tell him happy birthday. Follow me on Twitter at @7gomes, @itsevangomes. Follow the podcast on Twitter at @crossbodyofwork. You want to be following, because when we drop the new merch, that's where it's going to be. Cop the merch. Tell us you cop the merch. Send us a photo. Cool as fuck. That's a really cool thing. My dream one day is to be walking around in my own merch and have somebody be like, I fucking listen to that podcast. And I'll be like, surprise, it's me.
It's me. It's me, I don't know, Austin. If you're going to get that in Ottawa.
I don't think I'll get that in Ottawa. But if you're listening in Ottawa and you want to go get a beer and talk about wrestling, you hit me up.
But we'll when we that. Go to Chicago.
Everybody's coming to get deep dish pizza.
Everybody. We're all going to Lou Malnati's.
We're all getting pizza. All right. Next week, we're diving into Lucha Libre. And I'm so excited. With one of my best friends, I got him back into wrestling when we lived in the same city a couple of years ago. And one thing we would do is watch just old things on the network. Just pick a random show, whatever, throw it on. Old Survivor Series were a hit. And then randomly was like, let's just go dive into WCW. And this guy became, quote, our guy. This was our dude. The way that he wrestled, the way that he interacted with people, the gimmick, everything. We are looking at La Parca, who is so fucking funny. I am so ready to talk about La Parca, the chairman of the board, see him do dance moves, see him be an incredible wrestler. It's going to be great.
I know nothing about La Parca, so I'm really looking forward to this. I just know the memes, the chair stuff, the dancing.
It's the best part of him, and it's like 90% of him.
I don't think I've ever seen a La Parca match, if I'm being completely honest. I'm very excited for this, and it's going to be a Evan-heavy podcast. So if you're interested in those, this is all you.
Yeah.
Because let's be honest, most of these become Javier podcasts.
And then after La Parca is going to be the start of our next three-parter. Be sure to check on Twitter for the updates as to who we are covering then. Javier, any final words for the people?
Yes, life advice with Javier. Today was a good day for the mans. This Thursday, woke up, no Devontae Adams playing. Thank fuck for that. I hate the Packers, but also face him in fantasy football. Half hour late, still managed to score on some Air Jordan ones. Shout out to the Royal Blues. I'm very excited for them to come in.
Oh, Royal Blue, that's nice.
I had to do an appointment for my job. I had to get some blood drawn. And while I was there, scored a phone number just for being cute. Shout out
Ooh.
To me. Yep. So what I'm saying is fucking cherish the good days, because today has been a good day for the boy, and I'm going to cherish it. I'm going to love it. I'm going to fucking live the rest of today. And, you know, when you guys are out there having good days, fucking cherish them, because yeah, unfortunately they do not come around as often as we would like them to, so really just appreciate them while we're here. And if you're out there listening to this right now and you're having a shitty day, just know that it's not going to be the only shitty day you'll ever have, but hopefully a good day is right around the corner, because god damn it, do these feel good.
Maybe your own meat cute is right around the corner. Wouldn't that be nice wholesome
meat
kind
cute?
Yeah, it's a meat cute. The
fuck is that?
It's like a organic way of meeting somebody that like you have like a romantic interest in. It's like things that happen
I thought you were talking about meat like fucking chicken.
Jesus Christ. All right. That's a great place to end it. You know, maybe you'll find a cute chicken out there somewhere. We'll see you next week.
I hope so. Chickens are cute as fuck.
We'll see you next week for La Parca.